that's the first thing that I do when I go to a client is I interview the people that already work there to figure out what's going right, what's going wrong in your opinion. One of the questions I always ask is, if I were to give you a blank check right now, what are the top three things you would go after and why?
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast, celebrating women in tech around the world. And I am in Austin, Texas, at one of the most incredible co-working spaces called Impact Hub, who has been just extraordinary in supporting us to celebrate the Women in Tech of Austin. And I have Siri here, not the iPhone, right?
Nope. A little better.
Like an upgrade from the iPhone. Siri, is this your first podcast?
This is my first podcast.
Yay! Ah. And then like the crowd cheers. Yeah. Really excited that this is your first podcast. Siri, go ahead, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Siri, a little better from the iPhone. I don't give you wrong directions and I answer questions hopefully a little better. I am originally from Chicago. I moved down to Austin about 3 years ago for grad school and decided not to leave afterwards. I fell in love with the city, just the entrepreneurial community, the tech talent, and just the lifestyle was great. Plus, you know, two polar vortexes in a row in Chicago kind of just, I was done. I needed a break.
I'm having a massive love affair with Austin.
Austin's great. I love it. When I first moved here, I was like, oh, it's small. Because I'm like from Chicago, was born and raised in New York. Yeah. So it's like very big cities. And I came here, I'm like, oh, it's small. But now it's like, no, like, I love it. I have my spots to hang out. I have my restaurants to, like, eat at, places to chill, and the water's great, and I just love it so much.
And so you co-founded Reset.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys come up with the name? I had the opportunity to interview your co-founder.
Yeah.
So we got to talk to her for a little bit, Silva. But where did you guys come up with Reset? I didn't have a chance to ask Silva that.
Yeah, no worries. So Silva and I have known each other since grad school. We sat next to each other for 6 months because we had assigned seating in grad school. So it's really funny that 3 years later, we're starting a company together. And we have this list of startup ideas that we're like, whenever we just, and they can be outrageous, right? Like we've talked about doing like different mugs that have like compartments for coffee and water, like just like out of like pain points that we encounter every day. We're like, why isn't there not a solution for this?
Oh my God, I totally want to do that activity.
Oh my,
like
you
just
should just
get together and like,
and it's usually over
nerd
wine.
Fun.
It's usually over wine, but sometimes we're like, we'd be driving somewhere or walking somewhere and be like, startup idea, let's write that down.
Yeah.
We were experimenting with like, what could we do in the vibrator space? Wouldn't that be fun to innovate in? And we're like, okay, maybe not right now. Like, maybe we don't have an idea that's like revolutionary right now.
Right.
But over Christmas break, I did some traveling in Southeast Asia with my family, and just the people you meet out there, there's a lot of nomads out there. And you just come to having these conversations about like, are there ways that we could use what exists already to help people in need and help businesses that are traditionally not getting the capital they would like? And the conversations kind of turn into like, what about spaces that already exist that are not being used all the time? So I came home and I like went to her house and it was just like talking about our Christmas breaks.
Yeah.
And I was like, what about this idea? Like, what about if we used restaurants, if we partnered with restaurants and opened them up during the day? And at this point, I was a full-time work-from-home person.
Yeah.
She worked part-time. And we both like had a lot of issues about what was available.
Right.
I was going crazy. There were days where the only living being I saw was my cat.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to talk to people. I need to like be around people.
Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, this is cool. And so we were at a restaurant. We were at Pitchfork Pretty for dinner.
Yeah.
And we're like,
which, by the way, because of Silva's recommendation, I'm probably going there for dinner tonight.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Alex and Seth are doing such a great job with that space. And we went and we were sitting and we're like, this place is beautiful. We were just like looking around the whole time and we're like, wouldn't this be so cool if this was available to people during the day because it had so much, so many windows. Like the natural light in that place would look gorgeous. And we're like, okay, I think there might be something here. So we just started talking to a bunch of people that worked from home. We started talking to a bunch of restaurateurs and we're like, there seems to be interest. I did some of the numbers and I'm like, I think this could actually be like a thing that makes money and like run on its own. And then it just kind of taken off from there.
But now you're at 250 people on your wait list, which is so cool.
It's crazy. And we have three restaurants that by the end of the week have officially signed. They've all soft committed with us, but they're all around Austin. They're beautiful.
And Pitchfork is one of them.
Pitchfork is someone that that has been helping us in the process.
Got it.
They were one of the first restaurateurs that we went into and talked to. And we're like, hey, we have this idea.
Yeah.
We're not asking you to sign up or anything. We're just seeing if there's legs on it.
Yeah, because you need it to have market validation. You need to know what pain points you're solving, what problems come up, what objections come up. You need to have those people you feel comfortable having those conversations with to find out if you even have something that's meaningful to them.
Yeah. Exactly. And we both have full-time jobs, so we don't want to waste our time on something that won't work.
Right.
Right. So we're being really diligent about making sure we're actually solving pain points that exist and that are big enough that people want to change their routine to solve.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with technology in your house?
I grew up with science in my house. My dad is a PhD chemist. My mom has a master's in biochem. I've always gravitated towards science. I wanted to be a chemist. And then my dad's like, do you want to be in school forever? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
So I did chemical engineering instead. But when I was growing up, I very much gravitated towards Legos. I don't know how like often you hear that, but I loved Legos. I loved building new things and going off blueprints and not going off blueprints.
Yeah.
And when I got older, there was this really cool thing called Lego robotics.
Right.
And it was like you could program this set of Legos to do things like lift things up and push things and follow like censored paths.
Right.
I like ate this up. And so I did it in middle school. I just like was on a team in school and then I would take this thing home and like just play with like make my own little sets and stuff.
Right.
And then when I got into high school, I went into like serious robotics competitions where we're like welding machinery together and like working out of like BP's warehouses and stuff like that. And it was so fun. So I've always gravitated towards science, towards engineering. But tech in terms of like programming and apps and stuff like that, I feel like tech is just such a broad term now. Like it's in everything.
It is. Okay. Yeah. Because everybody has to have a website.
Yeah.
So are you in tech if you have a website? No.
No.
Everybody has to have a blog. You know, all these things. And it does get a little bit confusing, especially someone that's not familiar with tech, is who is actually in tech. So I feel it's a company that is either an e-commerce shop, has built a mobile app, is innovating sustainability or things that I'm not familiar with, like the med tech and, you know, even the sex tech you were referring to, like is innovating via product or that kind of thing, or science. But like if you're just a company that has an informational website, doesn't mean you're in tech.
No. And it's funny because we've been applying to accelerators and pitch competitions and just like trying to get our name out there. And every time it says to classify us, I always look at Silva. I'm like, so what do we classify ourselves as?
And
we classify ourselves as hospitality, but tech, like an app is actually really key for us to scale.
Yeah.
So we could be small beans and like be in Austin and be within 3 to 5 restaurants without any tech and just be a pure hospitality play.
Right.
But if we want to expand this to other neighborhoods and other cities eventually, tech is really the way we do it. So I see tech as more of a tool now than a classification.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great point. Like, do you need tech to serve what you're trying to build to reach your audience and to provide a better service?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is your game plan? Like, you're at 250. When do you guys want to open the door to launch? And where do you hope it goes? Like, what are your end of year goals?
Yeah. So we are launching August 20th. Yeah. We're launching at Nightcap. She is the owner of Nightcap. Is this like badass female restaurateur. She hustled so much to get that place open and continues to hustle across, you know, permitting and other things that the city keeps throwing at her. So we are super excited to be piloting with her. We launch August 20th. Then we'll be launching hopefully with our second restaurant right after Labor Day and our third restaurant at the end of September. So we are staggering our launches. So not every restaurant is the same, right? Yeah. So we're going to work out all our kinks slowly but surely. And hopefully, as we keep going, it'll be a smoother and smoother launch. By the end of the year, we're hoping to get 5 to 6 restaurants.
What does success look like to you?
Success looks like being able to scale this outside of Austin. So I think if we do 6 months here and we do this at 5 to 6 restaurants, that'll prove that, hey, this works in a city like Austin. Yeah. And we'll continue to grow within Austin. But what we want to do is pivot into other tier two cities like Austin. These are the Portlands, the Denvers, the Detroits, Nashville.
I haven't been yet.
Portland is so awesome. If you like whiskey library. You have to go there. It's like an old man's library, and there's like 400 or 500 types of whiskey. It's a lot of fun.
Like that.
Me too. And it's a really fun city. But there are cities like that which have the same types of people and sizes and the way that restaurant issues that occur in cities like that that are different than those in L.A., New York, Chicago.
One thing that I was asking earlier, and I don't think we actually got to the end of it, was we were talking about how you came up with Reset, and then you said that, about utilizing space that's not being utilized. However, how did you come up with the name, though?
Oh, Reset. Okay. This was another funny thing. So you can't just sit down and come up with a name. I feel like it's really – you can't just force yourself into creativity. Yeah. So we would just have these conversations where, like, an idea would come up. We would text each other. Or if we were together, we would just write it down. But why we settled on Reset, we wanted something short. We wanted something sweet and something that was, like, really easy to, like, work with from a logo perspective and from a catchiness perspective. But why I really liked Reset and why we both ended up on it is we're resetting the table.
Yeah.
Like, we're using a traditional table meant for food, like dinner or lunch, and we're resetting it for work.
I love it.
And we're also resetting your mind. Like, we're getting you out of an office. We're getting you out of your kitchen or wherever you're working right now into a new space that hopefully boosts your productivity and allows you to do the best work that you can.
I love it. What would you say has been both of you balance having a full-time job and being a full-time entrepreneur. What would you say the biggest challenge is in that, or does it actually help you be more efficient?
It allows us not to make decisions out of desperation, which is one of the really big reasons why we decided to do that.
Yeah.
So
I highly agree with that.
Yeah. We don't want to take money out of the business. We don't want to make really risky decisions because, oh my God, like I'm not going to be able to pay rent if we don't make this happen.
Yeah.
And so that's been really great. I think it also allows us to continue drawing inspiration from other places and other people. So Silva works at Dell, a major company.
Yeah.
It's huge in tech, and there's a lot of places to absorb inspiration from, whether it be from your people or the way they do work or the best practices not to do.
Totally.
I work for private equity firms. I consult for shops that are going under, right? I'm pretty much getting the playbook of what not to do from an organizational perspective or an employee perspective.
Yeah.
So it's been really good just to keep kind of our brains going and not be completely absorbed by the startup quite yet.
Let's dive into that. I think that would be really helpful to all of us. Like, what do you learn is some of the core things you find in common of companies going under?
A lot of it is due to organizational issues, not thinking about your employees, structuring this very poorly. A lot of hiring your friends. So a lot of companies we work with, private equity firms buy a lot of family-owned businesses. And these were great ideas, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. But a lot of these people don't have traditional business backgrounds.
Right.
And a lot of times they'll just start giving jobs to their friends that might not be able to do the work that they need to do. There was a company, I was out in San Francisco for 4 weeks in April with a small food and beverage company, and they were having 20% turnover month over month. These are people that are just leaving out the door. And in California, where like the unemployment is ridiculously low and there's not a lot of manufacturing jobs out there, like that's insane. That's costing you an arm and a leg. How could you execute? You could have a brilliant strategy to turn around a company, but you can't execute it without people.
Right.
Right. So we help management to realize like all of these are great ideas. You can't do any of these without figuring out your people problem first.
Right. And what can someone think about when thinking about organization and their people problem? Like what questions should they ask themselves to reevaluate? Maybe they have a supposedly healthy business, but they don't know. And they're listening to the show right now and they're like, I think things are fine. What kind of questions should they ask themselves to really start to assess how things actually are versus how they perceive they are.
There's some questions that I used to ask when I do interviews, right? That's the first thing that I do when I go to a client is I interview the people that already work there to figure out what's going right, what's going wrong in your opinion. One of the questions I always ask is, if I were to give you a blank check right now, what are the top three things you would go after and why?
What a great question. I've never even thought about that
before. It's really great because it forces them to prioritize things, and it also tells them – they'll tell you things that you wouldn't have gotten if you were to ask very pointed questions.
Or you'll hear horrible answers.
Or you hear horrible answers, or you gauge how good that leader is. I was talking to the head of HR, and I asked him this question, and he said he would expand the break room. That was the number one thing. With a business at a 20% turnover and people were leaving out the door and it takes 6 months to train someone new because it was manufacturing, he told me that he would expand the break room. I'm like, okay. To me, that tells me like you're not really – I don't even know if you're equipped for this job right now. Later found out that he was the owner's best friend's nephew.
Which ends back to the family thing. So you would ask, if I give you a blank check, what are the top three things you would spend money on to grow the business? Do you say to grow the
– No. What would you spend on right now, immediately? What are your most immediate concerns?
So you don't give anything leading, just
– No, because I think – and it's kind of taking a page out of design thinking. Don't lead the interviewee. Like this is – when Silva and I were interviewing people that work from home, we didn't ask specific questions. We were just like, hey, walk me through your day. Walk me through when you wake up to when you go to bed.
Yeah.
And we just kind of take it from there because when you just have someone kind of go off and ramble, they reveal a lot of things that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
I do think I ask leading questions sometimes because I, as a leader, I'm consistently trying to improve expectations and communication. But I think maybe I am a little too leading.
And I think it really depends on the situation. I think if you're really trying to answer specific questions, it's good to have a mix.
Yeah. I love that question, though. It would tell me so much. I have no idea what anybody on my team would say.
Yeah, I think you should try it out and over drinks or whatever. Like, get the barriers down and see what they say.
I'm so serious half the time. I'm like, I'll do it. Okay, team meeting, everybody. It didn't even occur to me, like, over drinks. I'm like, this is serious shit. You got to answer this question.
Now, on the spot, in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Another question I really like asking is, would you invest in this business? Would you put your own money into this business?
You're mentoring me.
If you think this business is doing well, you should ask people that question and see if they agree.
Sometimes I love that question. Sometimes I feel that the people who work for me by choosing to work for me are investing in the business because of their dedication.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, especially
like Janice,
when you're a small shop
like
this.
Janice has worked with me since 2012. Janice is our team assistant. And she's amazing. And she's probably not listening to this episode. But if you are somehow, I think you're extraordinary. and Carl, who is listening, I love you too, Carl. He's worked with me since 2005. We'll just go down the list. You know? But anyway, I feel – actually, when I was talking about that, I was thinking about Carl. So, Carl, I was thinking about you. Carl and I have a lot of conversations about this where Carl has invested so much dedication. So Janice and I took a break for a little while. No particular reason. I just didn't need a team assistant, right? And so Carl's been consistently with me since 2014 and works really hard and really diligently. And I'm always sending him these apology emails I'm so sorry we can only grow at the speed that we can grow. He's like, will you please stop worrying about it? I'm really happy and I feel very valued by you. He just reminds me that a lot of the professional abundance that's come into his life is because of my contacts and my recommendations and stuff like that, which makes me feel so
good. That's so awesome.
However, because he's chosen to work with me in a very lean way and dedicated over – we're in 2018. That's 4 years now of his dedication. I feel like he's been invested in this. And that's why I just have never occurred would you invest in that? It's never occurred to me to ask because I interpret their time and dedication as an investment.
I completely agree. I think with lean shops like yours and ours, a person's time is a huge investment because they could be doing something else and making probably way
more money.
That. With my clients, these are bigger enterprises. And so it's they're getting a really decent salary.
Yeah.
But it's hey, if I were to ask you to convert 10% of that into equity, would you do it?
Totally.
You could get such a big buyout if that did well. And if they say no, you're maybe I need to like look under the hood and see
Such
what's going
great
on.
Great question. I love that. So would you invest in this company if you were given a blank check? What are the top three things you'd spend it on? What is another one? Oh, mentor, man. Miss Mentor. These are great.
Walk me through where your team really like shines and where you're missing skills gaps, personality gaps, leadership skills, anything like that. It forces them to kind of reassess their team. It also is a moment for them to be vulnerable, which is not always the case, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Like when we were there with when I was there representing the private equity firm, these guys were going through so much. They had just been bought. Their company founder just got outed.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot going on, and so they were very upfront. They're like, we need this person. We don't have sufficient leadership in this function. We need help.
Yeah.
And they saw us as like a mouthpiece to leadership being like, hey, like we can prioritize these guys' requests because they are pretty major. It's little things like training, like equipment. Like these are little things that could be solved very quickly, but no one was like, was making these things known to the right people.
So I love this.
There is a cultural shift that occurs when you get to a certain size. So when you were talking about like, do I want to be in this $1 to $2 million range or do I want to be bigger than that?
Yeah.
It's you're going to be changing the culture of your organization to get
100%.
There. And like, so before grad school, I was at a very small consulting firm out of Chicago, New York, and it was about 30 people. And I was talking to the CEO and I was like, we compete against the big guys. Like, would you ever want to scale your business? He's like, honestly, I don't want to get bigger than 50. I'm like, well, 50, that's like an arbitrary number. He's like, no, I think the culture would shift to like everyone knows each other now. Everyone knows how each other works.
Yeah.
It's just very collegial. Everyone helps each other out. And he can pay us bonuses that put us in line with a lot of the bigger companies so he can get that talent.
Right, right, right.
Versus if they grew bigger, it's just it's way harder to maintain that type of culture, that pay. And also, like, there's a lot of, like, if we don't get business, we're still really small.
Yeah.
So if you don't get business, you might have to lay off people. And when you start laying off people, the morale at your company is just completely shifted.
Totally.
So I think that's one thing.
Yeah.
So when we think of reset and, like, the way we're trying to think about staffing and stuff like that, we want to keep it small and lean as well. Because there's a cultural part of that. And also, like, I think Sylvia and I are really good friends, and so that's a whole other quirk you're going to have to, like, encounter. Like, we're thinking about, like, okay, we're going to probably – our next big hire is going to be a CTO.
Yeah.
Right? And we're probably – because we don't have the coding background.
Right.
We need someone with the coding background. We're like, okay, like, people with that skill set, there's going to be a ton of them. But personality is what we're going to be doing it. And I think it's the same with you. Like, you need to screen all these people for personality. But the nice thing is, like, let's say you change your business model – your people love you, so it's fine. They'll shift to doing something else because they just want to be part of the journey.
Totally. And as a leader, what I've been thinking about is, you know, what type of business do I want? Like, how does it affect my lifestyle? And then what size? So I am pretty confident. I mean, unless I learn something different that will shift my perspective, I'm pretty confident I want a company that is under 10 employees and probably ideally like 5. Ish. You have a contractor here or there, but like five.
It's like a kitchen table.
Yeah. And I want to run – do you know Bono's organization? I think it's Red or something like that.
No.
Nonprofit. They do like billions in like philanthropic
work. They partner with Gap for some stuff, right? Yeah.
Anyway, their team I think is 2 or 3.
Oh, my God.
And they've done like billions. And I'm like, okay, if they can do billions, like –
yeah.
It does to me, like having a smaller team doesn't equate to being a smaller.
Oh, it doesn't limit you. No.
Yeah. And so I was like, it just means we're more efficient and we're more precise in what the rules are.
And you also decide when to outsource things that you don't know how to do.
Totally. Do I really need, unlike you, I'm like, do I really need a full-time web developer? Like, I don't.
Probably not.
Right? No. And so I'm like, that doesn't really need to be included in the five. It's, you know, and these are all things I'm like trying to figure out. And then when I was standing at this concert yesterday, totally like allergy filled with dust everywhere. I wasn't like stoked on the concert, but I was stoked on being able to be at the concert.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I want to build a company that would keep me from having this unique life experience? And I'm like, no, these life experiences are really important to me. So I need to build a company where I don't have to be standing at a conference a concert checking my email right then. Yeah. And I'm like, these are really important things for me to think about as we're in a growth stage, because I am the owner of the company. Wherever I take it is where it's going to go. And the person it's going to affect the most is you.
And Silva and I are thinking the same thing. Like, I came from management consulting. My life was someone else's.
Yeah.
And that's why I left ultimately. And she doesn't ever want to go to that type of lifestyle. So we've agreed that, like, we're just pretty organized in the way we work. We spend time together to work together, but we do a lot of our work apart wherever we want to do it, right? If I'm traveling, I do it there.
Yeah.
We both really like traveling. We both like taking time off. And that's really important to the way we grow. And so if we need to spend a little more money for an accountant, if we need to outsource HR instead of us learning how to do all this stuff and doing it ourselves – we're fine with it. We just, like, look at the money and just, like, and we're bootstrapped.
Yeah.
Every dollar is ours. So we are very careful with where we spend our money, but we also understand that time is money.
Yeah. By the way, have you heard of bench bookkeeping?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't used it myself, but I've heard good things.
Yeah. It's actually really nice. I'm learning about all these new startups in, like, all this back office, not sexy parts of your business. Like, Gusto is, like, an HR payroll looking at. The nice thing is both of us have MBAs, so we can take on some of this stuff. So right now I am our bookkeeper. And I'm like, I will do this until we get to this point, and then I can't do it anymore. Then it's worth an
account. I thought it was interesting when your co-founder Silva told me that you guys have like a dedicated host per restaurant, or you're planning on that, essentially on that overhead cost, whatever that expense. Why did you make that decision? I shouldn't make assumptions. Are you starting with one of you being the co-host for each co-working day, or are you legit starting with someone who's not you guys on a payroll type or paying?
That's a really good question. So we wanted to go through a business model that has the least risk, and the least risk meaning all the costs are variable. So even if we don't get revenue, we're fine because we didn't spend any money.
Right.
Our host is different. Our host is the only fixed cost we have.
That's what she was saying. Yeah. I was surprised.
And so if we were to be the host, we would have to quit our jobs. And to us, we make more money than a host would be paid. So in the way we're thinking about it, when it's flexible, we'll host. But if it's not flexible, we'll pay someone to host. And we're looking at people for hospitality backgrounds. So the way we're doing staffing is like half days. So Monday morning, Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon. We have three restaurants. There's only two of us. So she works part-time remote. So there might be slots that she could, like, she has pretty easy workload. She can, you know, be a host and also work. I'm off project. And when I'm off project, I can work like wherever I need to. And so I can go and do like a week at a restaurant. So we're building it very flexibly. So we can do that to reduce costs, but we're not going to quit our jobs to do that.
Walk me through Reset, because I think I may be misinterpreting one thing. What I pictured Reset, I pictured kind of like, I was telling Silva, there's this company in LA called Work Party Without the Vowels, which is really cool. I think you guys should collab together.
Okay.
They do pop-up co-working, but it could be in someone's home stuff.
Okay.
And they've built the tech for it, and I feel like super nice guy, Aiden. Such a collaborative kind human spirit. I feel like you guys would accelerate one another. He does pop-up co-working, so it's at variable times. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to sound like, and maybe I'm misreading it somewhere, that you guys have a set.
We do.
Really? So that I completely did not get that.
No worries. Okay. So we partner with dinner-only restaurants. So for example, Nightcap, which is in Clarksville, they are open 5 to 10 for dinner. And so 8 to 4... that space is sitting pretty.
Right.
There's people in the kitchen, like afternoon, like prepping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the front place is completely empty. Right. So that's what we use. So,
and it's every day then?
It's every day.
So, oh, totally didn't get that.
Monday through Friday.
But still, it's on a – it's literally like getting a co-working – like it's your alternate office.
Yeah. We're not – and I think it's pretty important to keep in mind. We're trying not to label ourselves as co-working because – we don't have phone booths.
Right.
We don't have unlimited beer on tap, and we don't have the hours that a co-working space. This co-working, like the one we're sitting
Impact
in right now,
Hub,
it's great for people that have startups that like are too big for someone's house but too small for a retail space.
Right.
It's great for people that are client-facing, that have companies that subsidize.
Totally.
Like this, I used to work here. I loved Impact Hub.
I love Impact
But then
Hub.
When I switched jobs and I don't have a company that subsidizes that was really hard for me to defend out of pocket.
Right, right.
And those are the people we're targeting.
Right, right. Like freelancers or like a remote team or,
Yeah, or I'm a fundraiser and I meet with clients all across the city. Instead of me jumping coffee shop to coffee shop, I can just have them meet me at this really cool restaurant space that I'm working out of the day because we allow guests to come in for 2 hours at a time.
This is so cool. So really it is an alternate way to not be inside your bedroom and to like have a place to go. But when you don't totally need a place to go, but it's just nice to have a place to go.
Getting out of your house, getting off your couch, putting on some pants.
Yeah.
That you don't like it.
Wait, how do you guarantee Wi-Fi?
We upgrade all the Wi-Fi.
Oh,
to business.
Because
not having Wi-Fi or having really crappy Wi-Fi
is the worst. Okay, I didn't understand that. This is so cool. So you create these partnerships with these restaurants that have closed hours but have staff in them. You have a reliable, dedicated host in each one, so there is quality control.
Yep.
And it also is so that the restaurant doesn't have to worry about their overhead. You then gift the restaurant upgraded internet so that your customers can have a reliable internet experience. And they have set times during the off hours, approximately 8 to 5 or whatever it is, to come in Monday through Friday so they don't have to be in their bedroom.
Exactly. And they have unlimited Wi-Fi, unlimited coffee, AC, beautiful space to work, and they're around
people.
That
is – okay. I'm so glad I understand. I thought it was more like Aiden's thing, pop-up co-working, except in dedicated restaurants where he does like people's homes and stuff.
No. We are a place that you could go to Monday
through
Friday.
And his is more experiential, like – Kumbaya, I'm out of the
house
on a Tuesday.
Which is super cool. Yeah. Like if you have a day off or two or if you're in town. Like I think that's a really cool idea.
No, but it's totally different.
And it's a different customer set.
And it makes it even more collaborative.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's dope.
Yeah.
I can't wait for you to offer that in like cities around the world.
I can't wait either. Like we're
it's just really
excited.
Smart.
Yeah.
It's a very operationally minded initiative. And that's what I like about it. It's not just gimmicky, like, cool restaurants. Like, I feel like you've approached it with your MBAs, which sometimes I question, like, why people get you, or I even get the question, like, why people get their MBAs or, you know, whatever. There's so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is a perfect example of how having an MBA has made you a more efficient and what's the word? It's like the opposite of narrow-minded, like full like full circle-minded.
Yeah.
Startup entrepreneur, because you're like, how do I solve this pain point on an operational level to make it win-win-win across the board?
Yeah, because our restaurants, like, I don't know what's happening in LA, but like in Austin, our restaurants are turning over so quickly. Like a typical restaurant,
like going out of business.
Yeah,
I mean,
like
I heard some bacon place went out of business. I'm like, how does a bacon restaurant go out of business?
When bacon restaurants are going out of business,
it's
know
a problem.
Shit's up. No, like restaurants are usually open for 4 to 5 years, and we're seeing turnover in 12 to 18 months. And these are like really well known chefs that have come from very good pedigree. It's insane. We're in a bubble right now.
Yeah,
and we're like we're done watching our favorite restaurants go under. If there's a way that we can help them stay afloat and help offset some of their rising rent or their rising labor costs, which are both the major issues that are happening in Austin right now, then like let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, just a couple more questions and we'll wrap it up. One is, by being part of the Reset community as a, how do you say, restaurateur, is there an added value in collaboration amongst the restaurants that are part of the Reset community?
When you look at restaurants, you look at restaurant groups, for example, they usually buy restaurants that are in similar tiers, let's say. You're at a certain type of quality and price point. So when we think about creating our Reset partnerships, we're looking at restaurants that would want to be partnered with other restaurants that we're partnering with. So higher-end restaurants, very focused on the food, focused on the community. They're typically smaller. We only partner with local independents. We're not partnering with chains and stuff like that. And so when we mention other restaurants that we're working with, they're like, oh, awesome. Like it's almost like a sign of confidence. Like, oh, I see myself in this same tier. And so what we'll launch off of that will be we're trying to do like member exclusive events for our people, like cooking demos and intimate dinners. So like one of the things that we realized in our interviews was a lot of people want to meet other people. Like, we were talking to a lot of people between the ages of, like, 27 yeah. and 45. And they're like, we haven't made new friends since college. And yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. And they're like, we're desperate. Like, we yeah. want to make new friends. Like, and when you work from home, you don't have work.
Totally.
Like a lot of people make their new friends at the office.
Totally.
And so I'm like, okay, so what do you do? And they're like, yeah. well, we go to meetups and, like, stuff like that, which is very common in Austin yeah. and other major cities. You know how hard it is, even for the most extroverted of extroverts, as a like yeah. a single person to walk into a group of people and introduce
100%.
Yourself?
100%.
Like, yeah. It's not great. Yeah. And so we're like, there has to be a way that you can meet people without having this, like, super awkward encounter. And it's almost kind of selfish because we're trying to solve problems that we ourselves have.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we're
yeah.
like, how do we fix this? And so we're like, what if you made it like an intimate dinner? What if you did like a table for six type idea?
Totally.
Six random people that are all within the Reset community. We organize a really cute little dinner for yeah. you at one of our restaurants, and it's like a set menu. And when you're a table for six people and you have wine and good food, the conversation is just going to go from there.
Totally.
And so we're like trying to break down these barriers.
Oh my God. You and I need to do a post interview like brain share
oh,
call
yeah.
because like I essentially did that over 400 times, jeez, but not yeah. for dinners specifically. Yeah. Like we did skydiving, clay pigeon shooting.
That's so cool.
Like all these things. It's called the We Are LA Tech Experience Club yeah. and we're reinventing it in a way. Part of it is these dinners in Los mm-hmm. Angeles, but not in the way you're describing. But I think you and I would benefit from sharing what we both
oh,
know about
sure.
community.
Yeah.
Because I literally can tell you exactly why people became a club member. And I know all the, you know, and I yeah. think that would be really valuable.
And we can help each other out. This yeah. is great. This is what
is really
I love,
great.
Like,
yeah. This is yeah. really, really great. Okay. So to wrap things up, I love to ask, what is one huge obstacle you've successfully overcome and how did you overcome it and what did you learn from it?
This is something that we're learning. How about that? Something
yeah,
that
yeah, yeah.
We went to interview for this accelerator plan where we would pitch our business and if they liked us, they would give us the resources yeah. to help us out because we're a growing startup.
Yeah.
And it was, we're two women.
Yeah.
We're talking to two men.
Yeah.
And I've read so many times about, like, women founders not getting funding and, like, yeah. women of color not getting yeah. – I'm like, oh, damn, we're a double whammy. This will be
yeah.
fun. And we went, and they talked to us like we were two little girls opening up a lemonade stand. I was like,
yeah.
what is going on here? There was one point where Silva, like, put her hand on me, like, just to be like, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
we just, like, powered through this yeah. and continue. And so that's something where I think we just have to grow thick skin – I think is the yeah. case here, and it's continue talking to other women founders about how they've overcome these situations, trying to find women investors,
yeah.
which there's not a lot of, unfortunately. And
do
like,
you know about True Wealth?
Yeah, True yeah. Wealth's really cool. They are really big into the wellness and consumer health angle.
Yeah, it may not be the
yeah.
right portfolio. Yeah, yeah.
But
maybe they
huge.
Could point you in the right
exactly.
direction.
And that's a nice thing. Like, you can ask these VCs and, like, yeah. a lot of the women investors, and they're like, hey, you're not a good fit for us, but, like, talk to these, like, yeah. I talked to Claire England at CTAN, and she's like, there's a really strong group of women entrepreneurs and investors in Austin. You just yeah. have to find them.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to do it.
I think a really empowering way to look at it, and it's something I've been thinking about in my personal life, is you're not the right fit for me. So yeah. rather than feeling they're looking at us as – instead come from a place of, like, power. I mean, like, you know, these people really aren't the right fit for me.
It's a really good way to look at it. Yeah. And I think it's a more sustainable way to look at it and
yeah.
more accurate way to look at it.
You know, I yeah. think – because I think about it a lot with, like, dating or people in my life and, like, feeling this need, just a human need to be validated or something mm-hmm. or to be accepted or loved unconditionally. And I think if we somehow find the confidence in ourselves – to say, I'm a really great person. I'm a loyal friend. I'm yeah. a person of integrity. I'm intelligent. I take risks. And when I fail, I get back up. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm worth knowing. And so when I go into a meeting, whether it's a business meeting or a potential friendship or whatever it is, yeah. and that person isn't treating me accordingly, I'm like, you know, you don't really get to know yeah. me because I'm a gift to know.
Yeah.
But not in a pompous way and just, like, make sure we have
you know
high
your,
quality.
You know your worth.
Yeah,
you know
which
value.
Is hard for us as women for some reason. I fluctuate.
I think that's
– I have moments like right yeah. now and then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not good enough.
And I think having a support network around you to remind you of that.
Yeah.
When you are fluctuating.
Yeah.
I think is really key.
Yeah.
And that's been something that I've had a lot of fun building in Austin from the MBA community and from the entrepreneurial community. There's so many like badass female entrepreneurs.
Totally.
And just like, you don't even have to be an entrepreneur. Just like be there and like support your fellow gals.
Because this accelerator may or may not have judged you unless we're in our brain. You know, but like, who cares? Because how does it serve you to care about what they're thinking?
And maybe it's not a fit and they just
didn't for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you get to decide because you're badass. And how many companies have, like, not been funded for years later, investors to regret that decision?
Exactly. I mean, look at J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter. Yeah. How many publishers turned her away?
I love stories like that. Yeah.
And
it's incredible.
Now look.
Biggest thing ever.
Yeah.
I think Forrest Gump, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. Where can people connect with you online?
You can find me on our website, hitreset.io. My email address is on there. LinkedIn, if you just send me a quick note saying
you
heard me.
Can you spell your name?
Yeah, S-I-R-I, and the last name is C-H-A-K-K-A. Just leave a little note saying you heard me on the podcast, and I would love to like get coffee if you're in town, catch up, and learn more about your story.
Amazing. This is so great.
It's awesome.
Been so great. This has been a really, really dynamic conversation that I hope helps all of you listening. And it would be great to hear if you want to share stories of how this has impacted you. Remember, you can say hello at Women in Tech Show on social, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Hey, I'm thinking we don't really use a website. But if we have a website, it would be like womenintechshow.com, or should it be womenintech.co? What do you think?
Oh, I like .co.
We do
have .io because that's like the hip thing to do in tech startups.
Amazing. You have the womenintech.io.
No. Oh, no. We have hitreset.io.
I was like, that's a great one.
I'm sorry. No, we've taken your domain. No, you should look at .co or .io. I think those are two hip ones.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Let us know on social. Remember, you can connect with more extraordinary women in tech on the Women in Tech Facebook group, womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. We do manually check that everybody is not a bot, essentially, and joining for the right reasons. Our amazing teammate, Janice, reviews everybody to make sure that it's all high-quality people that really care about one another in there. So definitely request to join, and Janice will get to you as fast as she possibly can. Sometimes we have like hundreds and hundreds of people waiting, but we don't want to like
risk. That's a good
risk.
Problem to have.
Yeah, but we don't want to risk like
someone
trying to, or a bot, or like someone trying to lead gen something, or, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I will talk to you guys, hear you guys, see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Hey, I'm Siri Chaka. I'm the co-founder of Reset. We're based here in Austin, Texas, partnering with local restaurants to open up their spaces during the day for the remote working community to work out of for the cost of 2 cups of coffee a day. And you're listening to Women in Tech.
Impact Hub here in Austin, Texas has been our home. We want to give a huge thanks to making it possible for us to comfortably meet and interview several inspiring women in tech. They have the most collaborative workspace, incredible events, beautiful design, a hammock in their backyard. What? It's an incredible space. You have to check it out if you're in Austin. Thank you so much for being a part of the Women in Tech journey. Be sure to go to impacthubaustin.com to get your free day of co-working. I want to give a huge thanks to the team at SpyCloud. SpyCloud protects your employee and customer information from breaches and account takeovers. Try SpyCloud's early warning breach detection platform. SpyCloud made it possible for us to meet with several women in tech here in Austin, Texas, and I am so thankful that they have been part of the Women in Tech podcast journey. Get protected today by going to spycloud.com. That's SPYCLOUD.com.